Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, KEYS. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.
That's when I thought, maybe I could homeschool one day. That's when everything changed and I was able to have the space to dream and meet my goals and live my life and enjoy my family and have the brain space to think outside the box and think like, what do I want to do from here? Instead of like, oh God, how can I even get through this day? And that's the thing with motherhood, is that the message out there is total BS. And it's just very like, oh, motherhood sucks. It's so hard. Like, just drink all the coffee. We can't remember the last time we showered, but it's fine. You know, good moms have sticky floors and happy kids. And I hate it. It does not have to be that way. It's a total lie. And I think when mothers believe that and they buy into it, that's when the first mistake is made. And you settle into this like, oh, this is so hard, but like, it just is what it is. And we'll just keep surviving and we'll get through it. And I believe that every single person is created to live life well and full and joyfully and abundantly. And there's this idea out there that it's almost like mothers are an exception to that. And we're just like sloppy and brawless and like just a total mess. And I know it's just a total crap show all the time. And I hate that, because it's just negative and it's such a lie. It does not have to be like that. You can feel good, look good, be happy, enjoy your kids, want to be with them, and also have a thriving business or a thriving hobby or thriving friendships and a great marriage. It can all be balanced. You're just spending too much time on your stuff. There's too much in your way taking up your time.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com.
Doing creative work can be kind of lonely, and that's why we built the Unmistakable Listener Tribe. The Tribe is a community for professionals to connect and support each other. Everything is designed to help you grow your business and share what's working and what isn't. And that's true whether you're a business owner or an artist. You'll get access to feedback, live conversations with guests, and so much more. By joining the Tribe, you become part of a community of creators who all support each other, and it's completely free. Hopefully I'll see you there. Visit unmistakablecreative.com/tribe to join. Again, that's unmistakablecreative.com/tribe.
Allie, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. This is great.
Yeah, it is my pleasure to have you here. So I actually came across your story by way of, I believe, your publicist or somebody on your team who wrote in and tell me a little bit about what you did. Mm-hmm. And given that it was about minimalism, something that I'm very intrigued by right now, I thought it was kind of a no-brainer to have you here. But before we get into all of that, I want to start by asking you a question I don't think I've ever asked anybody before. And that is, who would you say has been the most influential person in your life? And what impact have they had on the choices that you've made with your life and your career?
That's a really good question. I'm going to answer this based on like recently, because I think that's really hard to just think off the top of your head for like a lifetime answer. But recently I have been really, really influenced by Greg McKeown. He's the author of Essentialism. I don't know if you're familiar with that book. Yeah. And man, I think just something about being a mom of four, homeschooling my kids. I'm really, really passionate about my marriage and keeping that different than everyone else's. And so that's, you know, that's a lot of maintenance and just time together, running the business. I mean, I've got this company that's grown so fast. I've been kind of just falling backwards into learning how to be a boss and be a CEO and make sound decisions. You know, having these other families kind of riding on the success of my business. That book and the idea behind it of just kind of pushing aside the excess and asking what has to be done today, is so simple, but it has been profound for me and really, really changed my life and just given me permission to sort of say, you know, pause, please, or, you know, no, never mind to different things in my life, and focus on what needs to get done. It's increased revenue by about 3 times what it used to be. It's just made me a better wife and mom. It's just been incredible. So I'd have to say him. I had him on my podcast and he was just like such an amazing person to interview and talk with. He's a very influential guy. One of those guys where you're like, you look at what he's done in his life and you're like intimidated to even talk to him because he's just amazing.
Mm-hmm. So interesting. You know, I definitely am familiar with the book. I've read it, really familiar with his work. I wonder, were there others earlier in your life, like parents, teachers, people who come from your own background prior to your work?
Yeah, actually my mom, was a working mom. My parents are still married. They're happily married and they're such a great example in that way. But my mom, ran the company with my dad and it was a really busy company. So I was raised by entrepreneurs and I saw my mom work from home, and, you know, raise all of us. I'm the oldest of four. So, I mean, I'm sure you can even hear the similarities in our lives. So now that I'm an adult and I'm kind of living a life pretty similar to hers, I've really realized what an influence she had on me. And she did everything so well. And she balanced things and she messed up and would, you know, have a meltdown and then apologize to us later and just kind of navigated being a human being and just rocking both worlds so well. She was incredibly influential to me and the choices that I made in my life.
I always wonder with people who had entrepreneurial parents, what are the kinds of narratives that they passed on to you about career choices, education, and how did those narratives differ from the ones that your siblings got? And how did the choices that you and your siblings have made differ?
Yeah, that's a great question, especially for me, because I'm the oldest by kind of a lot. So it's me and my brothers 4 years younger. And then I have two other siblings who weren't even born until I was in junior high and high school. So we always joke that my and my brother's upbringing was completely different from my younger two siblings. But when I was being raised, my parents were in a season where, you know, the business was growing and it was really successful. And, I saw that and I remember kind of being there for their wins. They didn't really share too many details with me, but, I'm just a really kind of like empathetic and sensing person. So I just, you know, I could pick up on when there was like a really, really great thing that happened or a really big win in the business or a big success or a big failure or, you know, a lot of stress. And I feel like my mom just kind of stayed steady and stayed the same no matter what was going on. And that taught me a lot without me realizing it about being a mother and owning a business, because I think that being a business owner is very emotional and you are very connected to your business, especially for what I do when my business and my brand is really a direct branch off of me and who I am as a person. And so it can be hard to not kind of feel those highs and lows in your own personal self. You know, when something goes terribly wrong, it's very difficult to just go inside and play with the kids and be happy and, you know, have a great day. And it's not that she was fake or anything. It's just that she was calm and steady, even when things were a little rocky. And that spoke a lot to me about, you know, this balance of being a mom and working and being a business owner. And I mean, I think that my siblings saw something totally different because my parents had some life changes that happened when they were born. I think my mom worked a little bit less for them. So they don't really think of her in the same way that I do. And I've noticed that when I hear them talk about her, which is funny to me because it's the same mom, but Yeah, I think that just says something about the way that life kind of ebbs and flows, and the way that she, my mom, showed me how to have it all, really. And it doesn't need to be a choice between being a successful businesswoman and being a mom at home with her kids.
Yeah. So you grew up in a family with four kids, and you said you have four kids yourself. I wonder what you learned about navigating human relationships, social dynamics, leadership, and making decisions from both situations.
Yeah. One thing that's really different about my family now from the family that I grew up in is that my kids are really close in age because my siblings were so far apart. I never really thought it was a terrible thing, but I as I became an adult and, you know, my husband and I decided to grow our family, we had this really unmistakable drive to have our kids be very close in age. So I think maybe it did bother me a little bit. And it's funny how you'll kind of work that stuff out as an adult and realize, well, it must have affected me in some way because I really, really don't want that, you know? but yeah, I think that where you come from, whether you realize it or not, and some things I think you just can't realize until it's you're already in your adult life. You're already seeing the patterns or, you know, going the opposite way. I think they affect us so profoundly. And it's made me very aware of that as I'm raising kids who will now, you know, say this about me one day.
Mm-hmm. This is something I've always been curious about because my sister and I have a large age gap, and I've had people here with multiple siblings. And I always wondered, do you think that the age gap between siblings has an impact on the bond that forms between them? And if so, what is that impact and how has it been different with your kids and your own siblings?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I definitely believe that it does matter. Of course, there's so many things at play, like the different personality types and all of that. But from what I've seen, my older brother, okay, so I'm the oldest, but my brother that's older than my other brother, he's 4 years younger than me. We are the closest gap, and we are the least close. And it's just a personality thing. My other brother is 14 years younger than me, and he's extremely close with me. We talk every single day. I just hired him on in my business. He's working with me. We work great together and we're very, very close. You know, he tells me everything. He shares things with me that happened in his life before he shares them with other people. So, you know, that's interesting to me because we are so far apart, but his personality is a lot more like mine. But with my kids, they are all so different. Their personalities are, I mean, couldn't be more different, but they all have a special bond with each other, despite the ones that kind of like, you know, rub each other the wrong way sometimes. So I don't know. I think maybe it has something to do with just being close in age and kind of being into the same stuff at the same time. I think because they are so squished together, you know, they're all into Legos at the same time. And then they all kind of outgrew Thomas the Train at the same time. And now they're all reading around the same time. So they're going through the life stages at pretty much the same time. But I definitely think that there's a lot more at play than just the age gap. I think it's a personality thing for sure.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this, you're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now, with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Yeah. I wonder what advice from your own experiences with your own siblings you've passed on to your children.
We always say, you know, when somebody treats somebody else disrespectfully or if there's any, like, I mean, kids are kids. So no matter how you're raising them, every once in a while, you know, somebody will do something wrong or, you know, make fun of somebody or laugh when they shouldn't at something that somebody is saying or, you know, make somebody feel a negative emotion. And whenever we have that in our house, I just always kind of let it run its course and just say, you know, guys, you're so close in age. Like, you are going to be in each other's lives for longer than dad and I will be, you know, hopefully if things go how they usually do or how we hope they will, then you guys need to love each other and not treat each other like this. You know, things, boyfriends, girlfriends, friends, other people are going to kind of come and go. And this is family and you guys really matter to each other and you need to treat each other that way. And I feel like we've said that since they were babies and toddlers and it really has stuck. And now they'll repeat it to each other. Like if one of them gets their feelings hurt, they'll say like, hey, no, don't say that to me. We're going to be friends forever. Like we need to love each other. And it's really, really, really cool. I totally credit just giving them that in their little brains from a young age to their really close bond right now. And the fact that, you know, we do school at home and they're together all the time.
Yeah. Well, there's no way I was going to not ask you about the whole homeschooling thing, because I've always been very curious about how people are educated. So one, what prompted your decision to homeschool your kids?
So just being totally honest, I had no desire to homeschool. It doesn't really fit my personality type. I get, you know, easily frustrated, and I wasn't going to do it. But my husband and I worked really, really hard to get out of the normal, like 9-to-5 kind of schedule routine. He used to have like a really regular job that was it was called a 9-to-5, but it was really like a 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. He worked all the time and we were separate all the time. And we had kind of this, you know, pretty normal American stay-at-home mom, working dad dynamic. And we hated it. And we had planned for years to get out of it. And so when we finally did, through the business that I have now, we found that school kind of just kept us in that rhythm. And we were always taking trips when everybody else was taking trips and not really fully experiencing the freedom that we had worked so hard to obtain. So we had kind of dabbled in homeschooling a little bit when my daughter was being bullied when she was really young. But, you know, kind of put everyone back in school pretty quickly. And we just decided to go all in. So we started homeschooling, and it has been such an adjustment, but such a beautiful experience and so good. My bond with my daughter specifically has just skyrocketed. It's so close. It's so good and healthy now. And I mean, I think that everybody needs to do what they feel they should do. And there's always ways around, you know, your kids being gone from you during the day and creating that bond. But I just don't know if we specifically would have the bond that we have now if we weren't together during the day. It's just been really a neat experience, but it is incredibly, incredibly difficult at times.
I wonder, how do you develop the curriculum? How do you choose, or what role do they play in choosing what they want to learn? I mean, how do you figure out what's essential here?
Yeah. So I used to be really, like, I just didn't want to mess up, for lack of a better term. I just, you know, there's a lot of fear and a lot of guilt around homeschooling. And it's very much like an oversaturated industry where it's like, if you're not using this and this and this and this and all of these things, then your kids are missing out. And that's the biggest fear for a homeschooling parent, is that you're not giving them the best, that they're missing out on something. And I used to try to keep up with that and get these, you know, box curriculums that would take us like 6 hours a day. And, you know, basically it was the same amount of time as when they went to school, which it's supposed to be shorter and more, condensed into, you know, what the child needs, and take way less time because it's one-on-one. And it wasn't that way. It was taking all day. It was very frustrating. And I was basically just trying to cover all my bases and make sure like they weren't missing out on anything. And in doing that, they actually were missing out on the biggest perk of homeschooling, which is the love of learning and the thirst for knowledge and for wisdom. And they were just super turned off to learning. And it was just, it was one of the biggest mistakes that I made those first year or two homeschooling them. And so my husband and I kind of came together and just decided, like, look, let's pull the curtain back and start from scratch and just kind of follow our gut here and see what feels right. Like, we obviously, they need to have math, they need to have science and history, they need to know the basics, but how can we fit in a love of learning? And so we kind of stopped having a really rigid schedule. Again, we were kind of putting ourselves into this box of, well, what is normal? Well, normal people do school during these hours and it takes this long. You just kind of like subconsciously go back into those patterns because that's what people in our society do. They work these hours, they go to school these hours, they eat dinner at this time. Like, and we just kind of were like, let's just shake things up and get way out of the box and figure out what works best for us. What time of day are the kids like at their optimal, you know, mental state to learn? How does the morning kind of feel? It was feeling really rushed and really like just a joy suck. So we started having slower mornings. We started scheduling just the things that have to get done. Like, they need to progress in math. I don't want to homeschool my kids and have them go take the state testing and not be surpassed their grade level. That's my goal, just because I'm a little competitive. So we do math and we do science experiments, and they learn history. They learn about the history of our country and other civilizations, and they learn all that good stuff. But that only takes about 2 hours a day. So we scheduled that in and left a lot of breathing room for reading and browsing the bookstores and asking them, like, what's catching your eye here? My daughter's really into dragons right now. I mean, just anything medieval, anything like knights and dragons and all that. So there's a series called Wings of Fire about dragons, and it's this really cool, you know, fantasy world, kind of like Harry Potter, but with dragons. And so she just plowed through that. Whereas the year before, it took me 9 months to get her to read Black Beauty. And it just wasn't working. So kind of just finding the balance of getting in that good old-fashioned literature that they need and the learning that they need to feel good about their education and know that when they, if we were to do this forever and they grow up and they go to college, that they're good, but also leaving space for curiosity. We take a family hike every week. We're outside all the time. We'll move around. We don't do much school at the table because it's just really rigid and we just do math there and leave. We go to a coffee house and we'll get them breakfast and do school there. And I think also it's a lot of asking them questions and making them curious. And we always invite their questions, even the really hard ones, just kind of inviting them to always be curious. And also, I think one thing that's been really huge for us and for our kids is my husband and I feeling confident and saying, you know what, I really don't know that. Let's look it up together, and just kind of learning together and not feeling like we are the teachers and we have to know everything and we have to do school at this time in this way. So I think we found our good balance of kind of just being free and curious and making space for that kind of fun learning and giving the kids that thirst for knowledge and making them feel safe to ask any questions and just be curious about random things. And sometimes like it'll lead into a whole unit study. So if they start to, we're on a hike and they see a snake and they're super curious about that snake because we said, watch out if it rattles, like we need to get out of here. It's not good. If they bite you, you could die. That sparks curiosity. So we go home and we'll research that. Then that leads into a whole unit study on all the different types of snakes. And, you know, that spirals into, you know, a lesson about different climates in the world and where different snakes live and just kind of leaving space for that. That is how knowledge sticks into those little brains, not by sitting down at the table and, you know, telling them be quiet and stop kicking your feet. We need to learn this.
Mm-hmm. One thing I wonder is what impact has being homeschooled had on their worldview? What do you think the impact of it is to not have sort of the social influences and social program that comes from being around school and a group of other kids? Because I, in my mind, as I'm thinking about this and asking you this question, I always wondered, wow, if I didn't learn about popular kids and designer brands, like how different would my worldview have been?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is such a good question. I'm not, and I hate to phrase it like this, but I'm not one of those homeschoolers that's like very anti-school. So in this culture of homeschoolers, I tend to not really belong anywhere because it's either like really extreme like that, or just kind of like, well, I'm just homeschooling because I have to and I hate it. And so I definitely think like there's good things about going to public school. And I definitely think that there are positives. But what I've seen in my kids is just the beauty and their childhood lasting a lot longer. My daughter's going to be 10 next month, and she's like a normal 9-year-old in like, you know, the 70s, 80s, even 90s. Now it's like these girls are having eating disorders and they're catty and mean to each other. And it's sad. Everything is just starting so much earlier. And, you know, we saw a little bit of that when they did go to public school, but thankfully they were so young, they didn't get into these upper grades, you know, like fourth and fifth grade, where it's just getting so intense. I've got several friends who are pulling their girls out to homeschool because of bullying, you know, bulimia, and these girls are 9 years old. I don't understand. It's insanity, but it's the truth, and that's what's happening. And I think too, in terms of their worldview, we are Christians, and I was raised a Christian, but I have a really big problem with the Christian homeschooling atmosphere. If I can be so bold as to say that I really hate it, because it's very close-minded. It's very we don't even tell the kids there's other things out there. It's this is it and that's it. And so my husband, Brian, and I have really talked a lot. We have a meeting together once a month to go over the kids' schooling. And we talk almost every single time about like, how can we do this better? How can we just keep their brains open and let them know like, this is what we found to be true, but this is really interesting. Like, let's dive into this. I don't want them to grow up and get out there and be like, what the heck? Like, I didn't know anything about any of this. So they're really aware of other faiths, other religions, other cultures. That's probably my favorite thing to do with them is just study other cultures and how other people live life and eat and worship and do other things. And I also want them to find God for themselves. So this is so anti-Christian homeschooler, but we really don't do any Bible schooling. I grew up in a Christian private school, and if anything, it deterred me from the Lord. So I am really like, they see me reading the word. They see me having my time, my relationship with God. They see me spending that time each day, but I don't really say much about it. I'll answer their questions. I guide them when I need to. We talk about prayer. We talk about God and all those things as they ask, but it's not something that I force down their throat. And what I've seen is they're making that choice and they're experiencing him for themselves at such a young age. And it's so neat to see that. It's such a relief because it's a little scary to do something that's so different from how you were raised. And then about the social aspect that you asked about, what's been really shocking to me is to see my kids being incredibly well, like they're so well conversed. They can talk to adults. They can have a conversation. They make eye contact. Like, you know, of course there's certain ones that are a little shyer than the others, but they can have these conversations and they use like, you know, quotes, big words, and they talk and they know how to have a conversation. They know how to go up to a girl that looks like, you know, the same age as her and just talk to her and be her friend. And, I don't want to be, you know, I don't want this to sound harsh, but I simply don't see that from my friends' kids who go to school. They're very like tech obsessed. Their brains are fried. They're just freaking fried. It's sad. They're burned out. They're cranky. And so I've really seen my kids have this healthy, well-rounded worldview so far and to just, you know how to talk and know things about life. We travel all the time. It's one of our core values. We usually take a trip every month somewhere. So my kids have been to almost every state. They've seen and met a lot of people. They've been around. They're really like cultured, and they're 9 and under, and I think that's pretty incredible, and homeschooling has given us that.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Wow. Wow. Well, let's shift gears a little bit and start talking a little bit about your work. What is the trajectory that has led you to where you're at today, and what have been the significant inflection points?
So I think how I got started is, it's just really special to me, and it's kind of unique. I was a stay-at-home mom, and I had a hobby blog, because I've always been a writer and I love to write. And it was just kind of a good outlet for me. And, you know, I had like a few hundred followers and thought that was a really big deal. And, you know, it was exciting, and it was something that I did. But my husband worked for a really large company. He did like, tech and internet work, for businesses and stuff. And they moved us, out to the Midwest. So we're from Southern California, and we were moved to Northwest Arkansas, which was just a shock. The weather, the culture there, the dining, and it was all just a big shock. And, we were promised more pay and better hours. And, this is a company, I'm not allowed to name them. I made that mistake before, but it's a really big worldwide company, and they just don't care about their employees. And they totally lied about everything. We got out there and, well, yeah, it was better hours, but the pay was even less. It was way less than they said it was. And it was less than we had in California, not just because of the, what's the word, you know, the decrease in pay when you move somewhere cheaper, but less than even they said that would be. It was just a complete lie. And there was not enough work. Like, I don't even know why they moved us out there. I honestly just think it was what God wanted for us, because that situation and being ripped away from friends and family and trying to start over and ending up being in like 10 degrees and way worse off than we were here, even though we were barely making ends meet here, it was even worse there, kind of led me to stop pushing down this idea that had been bubbling up inside me for a couple years and decide, like, I'm going to do something about this. And I went all in. I taught myself how to code. I learned about turning a blog into a business, creating courses, and basically just got amped up about this idea that I could take my message of less and simplifying and helping. I was helping like a few hundred women, and I decided that I wanted to help millions. And so learning how to get there, I wrote guest posts like crazy. I did webinars. I created video series and would give them away to other websites for free if they would just link to my site. I did everything I could. And about a year in, we went viral. That was in 2016. And we were actually, the article that I wrote was trending above the first Hillary Trump debate of that election, which was insane and such an honor. It was so amazing to see that happen after like all that hard work. And so after that viral article, things started coming in. We were on Jenny McCarthy's show, Good Morning America, the Today Show, Huffington Post, all of these, you know, big media outlets. And that kind of kickstarted the business. I went from having about 500 people on my email list to 25,000 overnight. And we went from having like -$100 in our bank account to $25,000 also overnight. It was an experience that I will never, ever forget. And that kind of like jet launched the business and the success that it is now.
No. Where did this whole idea of living with less come from?
It came from me and my story and my motherhood. Back before we had moved to the Midwest and all that happened, we didn't even have our last baby yet. I was just really overwhelmed. I definitely had depression. I will kind of struggle with that. It's just part of who I am. And I was in this dip really bad and just I felt like I was the only mom in the world that like couldn't get it together. It was really, really hard. I kind of would just wake up every day instead of being like, okay, you know, it's a new day. I would feel like, oh God, could it be night still? Because I don't even have what I need to get through this morning, let alone the entire day. And that is a really, really terrible place to be day in and day out for months and months at a time. So I was kind of in that place, and I really just ended up hitting a breaking point and kind of snapping out of it and getting back to my usual self, which is really like go-getter, and thinking like, okay, I'm going to figure out what is causing this. And basically, long story shorter, I had this moment where I just had an epiphany and I realized like I could see my days. I just had this like thought, like I could see how I was spending my days in my head. And all I was doing was like, was maintaining my space and maintaining my life instead of enjoying it. I was like shooing my kids away so that I could catch up on the housework and spending my nights and weekends catching up on laundry, not because I'm a neat freak or anything, just because that's the level it was at. It was constant. And I never felt like I was able to really enjoy my family, enjoy my babies, enjoy my time with my husband, without paying a serious consequence of catching up later.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up just realizing that, and I started to just purge. I mean, I literally just like got the kids in bed that night and got a trash bag and went at it. And I got rid of anything that didn't feel like it was worth going into my new life. I decided like this is going to be a splitting point. And, you know, I'm like when you're splitting a video, like this is it. I'm putting a split here. And from now on, everything's going to be different. What's worth coming with me and what is not? And very little was. So I trash bagged everything up. I donated it all the next day or threw it away if it was trash. And I worked through my house over the course of a few months. And I mean, immediately before I even finished, the next day, everything was different. The kids played better together because kids play so much better when they have less options and they're less overwhelmed. I felt like I had way more time in my day. I didn't have a pile of dishes to wash at the end of every night because we just had what we needed for the day. And then I would, you know, rinse them and use them again. And there was less laundry to wash. Like everything just got lighter. And that's when I started my blog. That's when I thought, maybe I could homeschool one day. That's when everything changed and I was able to have the space to dream and meet my goals and live my life and enjoy my family and have the brain space to think outside the box and think like, what do I want to do from here? Instead of like, oh God, how can I even get through this day? And that's the thing with motherhood is that the message out there is total BS. And it's just very like, oh, motherhood sucks. It's so hard. Like, just drink all the coffee. We can't remember the last time we showered, but it's fine. You know, good moms have sticky floors and happy kids. And I hate it. It does not have to be that way. It's a total lie. And I think when mothers believe that and they buy into it, that's when the first mistake is made. And you settle into this like, oh, this is so hard, but like, it just is what it is. And we'll just keep surviving and we'll get through it. And I believe that every single person is created to live life well and full and joyfully and abundantly. And there's this idea out there that it's almost like mothers are an exception to that. And we're just like sloppy and braless and like just a total mess. And I know it's just a total crap show all the time. And I hate that because it's just negative and it's such a lie. It does not have to be like that. You can feel good, look good, be happy, enjoy your kids, want to be with them, and also have a thriving business or a thriving hobby or thriving friendships and a great marriage. It can all be balanced. You're just spending too much time on your stuff. There's too much in your way taking up your time.
Yeah. Why do you think that is? Why is it that you think we place such a high value on material possessions as a culture? And why does it take the kind of wake up call that you had for people to realize that? Because I was just writing about this morning. I you know, had this piece titled Advice to Graduating Seniors, what I would tell myself if I could go back. And I'm going to republish it because the last time I published it was in May. And I thought, okay, you know what? Better to give this advice in January when they can actually do something with it. And one of the things I did was I looked around my room. And I realized it's like, wow, I don't have anything materially that I had when I was in my 20s, like none of it. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder why you think that that is such a dominant cultural narrative and why it takes a wake up call like the one you had to change it.
Well, I think it's just, I mean, obviously it's a money game and the messages that we're being bombarded with are really intense and it's all like more is better. And it's very, very like subliminal, but it's there. And if you open your eyes for even just an afternoon and you notice it around you, it's everywhere. And even like I was reading recently about how Target sets up their store. And it sounds kind of weird, but I almost got kind of emotional and teary reading about it because it's kind of sick. Like they spend so much money on people who professionally deceive and place things in certain places to where you're not even thinking about it and you're just buying junk. And that's where they spend most of their money is just on the layout and on the science behind, well, how can we get them to grab more? And they put things like the deodorant that you walked in for way in the back of the store. So you're walking through all these other things first. I mean, I would encourage anyone listening to this to look that up because it's really eye-opening and it's just this deception game. And there's nothing wrong with having things that make you happy. Like I loved interior design and I love having a beautiful home. My style is really like kind of modern and bohemian. So there's lots of little things everywhere that make me really happy and layered rugs and things like that. But it's all stuff that goes into the flow of this is where I school my children. This is where I work, where I create, where I provide for my family. And I need to love being here. It's not about just materialism and stacking up stuff for the sake of look how much stuff I have. Look how nice this is. Look how beautiful and perfect everything is. But I think as a culture, we're very focused on appearances. Just getting kind of open here. But my business has started to make multiple seven figures every year. And my husband and I have chosen to take a small percentage of that and not really like increase our earnings as the business increases because we just don't need that much. And so we have like a really normal house in a normal neighborhood. And like I said, I love design. So the inside of the home is, I think it's beautiful and I love it, but it's, you know, it's pretty normal. We have normal cars, nothing crazy going on. We spend our money on experiences and travel with the kids. And so many times there's like an underlying tone in conversations with people. Like we love to host things. So we have like people come over from church and, you know, I have a book club and all this stuff going on at our house. And so many times the conversations will be like, how can I put this without thinking of an example? Basically like, oh yeah, like, well, I know you're not doing this well, because if you were, you would have a mansion up in Bear Creek over here in Temecula in the hills, and you don't. So maybe one day that'll happen. You know what I mean? Like this kind of underlying tone of like, you see what somebody has and you label them. And if you're rich, then you spend your money on a big house and a fancy car. And if you're not rich, you don't. And if you say you're rich, but you don't have those things, you're lying. And it's this weird game, especially in what I do and meeting other people who, you know, make what I make and do what I do. It's like this weird dichotomy of like, I don't know. It's just a weird game people play where it's like, well, I have this, so I drive an Audi. So obviously, you know, it's everywhere. And it's just so weird. And it's a game that I used to want to play because I used to be poor and I like that I'm not anymore, but it's just so pointless. And I think that because of things like that, as a culture, we're just driven to showing what we have, or if we don't have it, setting up a facade that shows we have it even though we don't. And that's why everyone's in debt and we've got so much stuff. Our houses are like upwards of 3,000 square feet And we also have storage units. Some people have multiple storage units. It's out of control.
Yeah. Well, my parents' garage always reminds me of that. So this actually raises a question. You mentioned earlier going from sort of 500 followers to 25,000 subscribers to multiple seven figures. So we're talking about metrics, which makes me really wonder, how do you measure your life?
Honestly, it's by how I feel. Right now we're having like really great success in the business, but I've just really felt like my mental health is slipping, and I've kind of been going back into a lull, and I'm not taking good care of myself. So to me, that is not a win. It's just not. Yeah. It's great to increase revenue. It's great to be able to give more. It's great. But at what cost? It cost me sleep. It cost me peace. It cost me being really stressed. It cost me missing out on my kids' karate lessons a couple of times in the last couple months. And that makes me super sad. So what was that all for? And so that's, to me, kind of a check-in of like, great, I'm glad that we have that and that happened. But if I could do it over again, I would not. It's better to just stay where we were. And because I'm so competitive and I'm so numbers driven, and I love increasing and I'm always working on something, it's hard for me. It's hard for me to check myself before I wreck myself and kind of step back and say, what is this going to cost me? Can I do this while still maintaining good mental health and good relationships? It's fine to have seasons where work is a little more prominent than family and vice versa. But if you're not ready for that, if it's not a good time, I'm learning to say no, thank you, and wait and just take better care of myself. So I think I'd have to say that I measure my life based on how I'm feeling and what's the health of my marriage like, because my marriage is the foundation of our family. And what's the health with my relationship with my children, and how am I feeling? If I feel really tired, something's off, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the reason I asked this is, you know, we recently had a guest named Will Storr here who wrote a book called Selfie, How We've Become So Self-Obsessed and What It's Doing to Us. And a lot of the research was extremely disturbing. You know, sort of this idea that if you don't have 100,000 followers, or you're not famous like Beyonce or Steve Jobs or Oprah, you've effectively failed at life. And that seems to be the underlying message, I think. And I think the impact of that, which I happen to agree with him, is incredibly toxic. Because you can read a website like Medium every single day, and it's littered with what I would call success porn, some of which I've probably written myself. And so I wonder, when you experience the kind of sort of drastic shift that you have from, you know, sort of lingering in obscurity to suddenly being really famous, how do you remain detached from that? And also being, you know, the competitive person that you are, how do you keep your ego out of it?
Yeah, that is such a good question. And honestly, it's just such a process. It's constantly checking in. In the last year or so, I've taken up meditation every morning. And now I'm up to doing it for like maybe 30 minutes to an hour, depending on the day. And that has been really, really huge for what you just asked. Just kind of knowing where I'm at, knowing myself, realizing my motives, making decisions for the day. Like, you know what? I really don't like where my heart is at in doing this live or doing this feature. I need to either just kind of check myself and get my headspace in a different place or cancel it. Because I think the worst thing that I see in being in the industry that I'm in, being, you know, quote, connected and hanging out with these other people, I see they're not good people. And unfortunately, most of them are like Christian leaders and authors, and they're preaching all this stuff and talking about, you know, self-care and, you know, keep going, you can do it, and all these positive things, but they're awful people. And when I meet them, it's very, very clear. And I know that's a powerful thing to say about somebody, but it's very clear. You're not what you say you are. And it's like the fame goes to their head, and that has got to be the most unattractive quality on the planet. Cause it's just like the ego is it's so there, and it's so big, and it's so unattractive. And so because I am so driven and I'm so numbers motivated, and I love growth, and I'm always trying to increase things, because if I increase, then that means that's more women getting my message. So I try to focus on that part of it. I have a sign in my office that says a million people over $1 million. And it just serves as a reminder, like, yes, $1 million. Great. We need that. We need to help the world and save women from sex trafficking and give to these organizations that are doing that and provide for our employees and for ourselves and our future. But $1 million means that, I mean, divide that by the prices of my course, like that's a lot of women who now have hope and a lighter, a way to get out of the muck and get into a lighter lifestyle. So I think the biggest part is just meditating and focusing inward and what's going on with me and what are my motives for the different things that I'm doing, especially if it's going to be something that feeds that in me, like a really big television feature, or like an honor or like a award or something like that. Always having to check in and just stay humble and really intentionally do that. And then remembering, even with the big goals, like, yes, the email list size matters because we can project income from that and just, you know, figure out how much we'll make on each launch. And that matters, but not to focus on the number of dollars and the number of people, but focus on how many of them are going to create change in their lives by getting enrolled in my program. And I think that's what the best thing is about having a business that is like purpose and heart centered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, the reason that came up in my mind is one of my oldest friends and a former business partner, he and I were talking about friends of his wife that are like YouTube celebrities. And so he's like, these are terrible friends. Like mm-hmm. he said, they don't reply to texts, but they'll reply to strangers on the internet via Instagram and talk about, you know, the various thing you're talking about, like self-love and self-care, and I'm here for you. And yet the people that they actually know in their real lives, they're flaky as hell with.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's so true. And oh my gosh, God forbid that ever be where I go on this path. But I have to say too, that it is so hard because it's a weird, like the internet is so amazing, but it's given us this new weird thing where your life is on display and you can control how much of it you share and how much you don't, which I think is real, really the key to staying healthy in this. But it is so weird. Like my life and my family, my kids, how I'm raising them, how we live, what our house is like. That's my brand. That's my business. It's the lifeblood. So when I share that and I'm open and I share like, this is what we're doing today, or here's how I structure my schedule. I know when I share those things, business increases. People trust me. It builds the know, like, trust factor. I need to do those things. So it can be really difficult to not prioritize that because you're kind of equating it like, this is money. And also, I mean, I'm sure you've read some of the studies done that show like what it does to your brain when you see those likes on Instagram and you get that feedback. Like it's kind of like basically it's giving you a new type of high. Yep. And it's addictive. And I mean, for anyone listening to this, I would say like, you've got to set up breaks. I just got off a week long break with no Instagram on my phone. And it was so, so good for me. Just realizing how often I felt the urge to pick up my phone and capture something instead of being in it. Just kind of that wake up call, like fast from the things that you need to do, but you don't always need to do. The world's not going to end. Like revenue's not going to stop if you just take a break, especially YouTubing. My God, so draining.
Interesting. Yeah, it's funny because we just had Cal Newport here to talk about his book, Digital Minimalism. And Cal has been a vocal critic of all things social media and questioned yes. the authority of it, as I have as well, more and more, especially now that I've been off since the beginning of January. Like I haven't had a single Facebook status update or, you know, mm-hmm. Instagram post. And what I am finding is that the value of it is beginning to be really questionable to me. And mm-hmm. I'm beginning to see that maybe this isn't essential. You know, we started out talking about essentialism and it's becoming very clear to me that this doesn't need to be an integral part of everybody's life. And the fact that it's becoming much, much less a part of my life is making me a much happier person.
Absolutely. So I'm, you know, the people that are on my team are always like, please stop saying that in interviews, but I'm always going to say it. I'm not on Facebook at all. I have a team of people who on my Facebook page where it's more public and people are new and they're, you know, it's weird if they're like, who's this random person commenting? I thought I was on Allie's page. They'll be my voice and they'll encourage people and talk to them and say, hey, you can come over here to this group if you need this. And they run my admins are paid to run my groups. And people know that in there, like I'm not in there. I just don't spend time in there and I can't. Facebook drains me. Oh my gosh. I hate Facebook. I don't even have it on my phone. I use a third party app to do live streams when I need to. But Instagram, I like. It doesn't drain me. I like it. And I can control that. But it, once a month, like I delete it from my phone and just take a breather. It just doesn't need to be there. Sure, it helps and it builds, again, it's building that know, like, trust factor because not everybody opens their emails. But if I had to drop it, I absolutely could. And I think it's important to not use that as an excuse like, oh, well, it's my business. I have to. Like, no, you don't. You can email, you could delegate, you could record something on your phone and have somebody post it for you. Whatever you can do to stay mentally healthy and create less in every aspect of your work, especially social media, do that.
Well, I think that makes a really fitting end to a very thought-provoking conversation. So I want to finish with one last question, which is how we finish all of our interviews at The Unmistakable Creative. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
I have to say just having everything that you do in your life, everything that you say to the people that you love. And if you are, you know, and any sort of platform, which I think we all are, I think people think platform means you have like tens of thousands of people, but even if you have a 100 or 50, like that's a platform. I think letting everything that you say on there and that you put out into the world coming from really, where are you? Like, really, what are you learning? What are you going through? What are you figuring out right now? And the internet giving us the gift to share that with people is huge. And it's all for nothing if it's fake or if it's what we think we should say, or we stole it from somebody else. You know, it's where are you right now and what are you learning and how can you put that out into the world to encourage somebody who's going through that as well and really be your authentic self?
Amazing. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us and share your story and your insights with our listeners. Where can people find out more about you, your work, and everything they're up to?
Yeah, I think just heading to my website, it's just alicasaza.com. You can kind of choose your own adventure there. And if you need help decluttering or simplifying, or you just feel heavy, you know, that you can get some free resources there. Or follow me on Instagram, because that is where I do show up and you can kind of see day-to-day stuff there.
Awesome. And for everybody listening, we'll wrap the show with that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. While you were listening, were there any moments you found fascinating, inspiring, instructive, maybe even heartwarming? Can you think of anyone, a friend or a family member who would appreciate this moment? If so, take a second and share today's episode with that one person, because good ideas and messages are meant to be shared.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays.
Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.